Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast, your place to go for on-demand Titans coverage that is 100% free of the nonsense that we always see in sports talk these days. I am Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of No Nonsense, Matthias Wadner and Will Lomas. We're back after taking the Titans bye week off we got a lot of things to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about the Patriots game since we didn't get the chance to do that last week. But mainly, what we're going to be doing throughout this episode is looking ahead at the rest of the season, because the Titans have 5 games left. They currently sit at 8-4. They're near the top of the AFC. They no longer have the top spot after losing 2 straight games, 1 to Houston and 1 to New England. But they're right there. They're neck and neck with some guys getting healthy and coming back. We're going to talk about whether this team is capable of getting the number one seed in the AFC. We're also going to be talking about who specifically will be coming back for this team, who we can expect to be out there on Sunday that hasn't been out there lately. And we'll talk about what needs to happen with the Titans to reverse course of this little skid that they've been on over the last 2 weeks. Guys, welcome back. I don't know if you can hear it, those of you who are listening. I'm a little bit under the weather. I'm powering through it as best as I can. I've managed to get a little bit of power to come out of my voice. It's maybe not as up to snuff as it typically is. But guys, did you enjoy the bye week, the week off? And I guess we'll just start there.
I did enjoy the bye week. It was nice to not have to worry about the Titans, which seems like that's all we've been doing recently. All these injuries have really taken a toll on the team, and in turn it's taken a toll on fans because they're not seeing the best product that should be out there like we had been seeing earlier in the season. So it was nice to get a bye week away from the Titans, to be honest, and just kind of relax and watch some football. Unfortunately, the Bills didn't come through on Monday night. That would have been nice. It would have made the bye week a little better. But I'm glad the Titans seem to be getting healthier. They got some rest, and yeah, just ready to attack the rest of the season.
No, it was miserable. It is not fun when the Titans lose and you head into the bye week. That is awful. It's good that they were getting healthier, but man, losing back, like the lowest point of the season, being drug out while everybody basically runs the Titans' name through the mud and talks about how there's no real contenders in the AFC other than the Patriots and somehow the Colts, is not how I enjoyed spending my off week.
The talk heading into the bye week for the Titans was, you know, has there ever been a team in NFL history that needed a bye week more? Because like I said earlier, they were on a 2-game skid. They were very clearly starting to run out of juice. And with the pileup of injuries, it was, I'm sure, becoming very difficult for Todd Downing and Shane Bowen to, you know, manufacture a game plan, especially against New England. How much do you think the bye week can serve as a reset for the Titans? Maybe even beyond just, it was a week of rest for guys to get healthy. Like, how much can we expect the Titans team that we see moving forward to not look like what we saw against Houston and New England?
I do think it was probably important to them from a mental standpoint. I mean, losing 2 games in a row, especially one of them being to the Texans, and then you go to New England, have to travel there in the cold, and you end up getting crushed by the end of the game just because you turn the ball over so many times. Like, that's mentally draining, those types of games, those types of losses. So I think this bye week should have done them a lot of good in that department, in addition to getting some of these guys healthier. And I mean, I know we can't say that they're just going to crush the Jaguars, but I feel like they're going to come out pretty determined in this game against a Jaguars team that's lifeless. Like, they have no life. They're terrible. The players seem to have already turned on Urban Meyer. The Titans should come in and crush them, especially at home. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I feel like they should. And if they're in the right mental space and they get a couple of players back from injury, or at least a little bit healthier, I think that's what we should expect from them.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, really, against the Patriots, they didn't look bad necessarily. Like, the running game was better than it's been at any point this season. So, like, there have been some positives, not really in that Texans game, but there were some positives to take away from the Patriots game. It's just, you know, how much do, you know, one or two players help? How many players do they need to get back before they don't feel as broken? Like, that remains to be seen, just because until we know how much practice they get together and how, you know, conditioned and, you know, how ready some of these guys are to go, like, we have to find that out first before we can say that it won't look like it has in the past. But at this point, every little bit helps, and the week off especially helps.
I want to say this about really each of the last two games, and I wrote this after the Patriots game, and a lot of people didn't like it. As banged up as the Titans have been, I don't know that, you know, maybe against Houston, but against New England, I don't think injuries are why they lost that game, because they were in that game until late in the third quarter. Why the Titans are 0-2 in their last two games is not that hard to figure out. It's because they've turned the ball over 9 times. That is, like, totally unacceptable. It's sad. And it's got to stop. That's why the Titans are 0-2 in their last two, because they've turned the ball over literally 9 times. It sounds like I'm being hyperbolic. You know, 9 turnovers in 2 games. No, like, that they've actually turned it over 9 times in 2 games. Like, how patently ridiculous is that?
Yeah, you're not wrong. Like, that's why they lost those two games. But I mean, the turnovers, I guess we can say, are a byproduct of the injuries, just because I don't see Derrick Henry fumbling 2 times in 1 game. And if he's in that Patriots game, like, that outcome could be totally different. And then you think about the receivers that Tannehill's been throwing to, like, I think that has something to do with a lot of the interceptions that he's throwing. So I think they go hand in hand, but you are right. Like, they could have won both of those games rather easily. Like, they were in that Patriots game for a long duration of the game. But it's just like they ran out of gas, like we've talked about. So I don't know.
I mean, I think the Titans are 2-0 in those games if they turn the ball over 5 times instead of 9.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Although Will is going to say that Downing was the problem, because probably shouldn't have thrown 50 times in that Texans game to begin with. So I don't know.
I mean, I wasn't going to say that, but you're not wrong. Like, it is a bad idea to throw 50 times in the rainstorm. But, like, yeah, it's like saying, you know, I don't know. Like, you are right. Like, turning the ball over like that, like, isn't sustainable, but there is a pretty direct correlation with players who were targeted or who had the ball when that was happening, and players who aren't normally starters or who played on practice squad. Like, the offense just, when you've got guys out there who don't know where they're supposed to run, who drop passes, you know, all that kind of stuff, that's not very fun. And then it typically leads to bad things. And then the defense has to play on their heels, because I mean, when David Long's not in there, they just don't have any teeth. Like, they really tighten up and don't want to get aggressive. And there you go. They don't, like, seem to attack the same way on the defensive line, and I don't know why that is. You can find a lot of clips of Jayon Brown just not being in the right spot, which, you know, I mean, they don't really have another option to besides Jayon Brown right now. He's going to get playing time, so that kind of is what it is. But I mean, if everybody can get healthier and you can get, 9 starters on both sides of the ball. I think these pressure situations, like the third downs and, you know, fourth downs and all that thing, I think those all look a little bit better. You get a little less of those dumb turnovers and you get a little more creating turnovers on the defensive side. Like, I think it looks better.
It hadn't been good over the last two games. But as we talk about the fate of this team, and we're going to get into the injuries more, we'll talk about who's coming back. But looking ahead to the fate of this Titans team and the rest of the season, I think that Super Bowl is still in play. Now, we'll talk about seeding momentarily, but in term, you know, they're going to get to the playoffs. And in terms of can this Titans team get to the Super Bowl, I don't see why not. And but that isn't about really what the Titans have shown me or have shown us. It's more about what the rest of the top of the AFC has not shown. And I'm not saying that, you know, oh, the Bills are frauds or the Ravens, you know, anything like that. What I'm saying is there is no powerhouse team in the AFC where you look at and you're like, man, we don't want to face them. Like, you don't want to catch that smoke. It's like, okay, the Bills, you know, Josh Allen, great quarterback, had some bad games. The Bengals played really well in stretches, looked awful in other stretches. Same with the Chargers, all over the place. Lamar Jackson has been terrible lately. Like, you look at these top AFC teams and there's nothing spectacular about them. They're good teams, I think, but they're not, you know, again, it's not like, you know, oh, you don't want that smoke. So I tend to think that I'm not even going to say if the Titans get Henry back. Like, I'm going to say if they get two of the three of Henry, Jones, and Brown back, and Jones looks like will be back sooner than later. Like, I think if they get two of those three back, I don't know how you could look at the Titans and say, well, they've just got no shot.
I totally agree. Like, this has been just a weird season in general, and it's hard to judge the Titans. It's hard to judge them as a team because there have been so many ups and downs, but so many of the downs have been a result of a lot of these injuries and other circumstances. So I don't know. Like, I agree with you. I think they are very much still in play as a Super Bowl contender because they have shown when they're at least not like everyone's in the hospital, like as long as they're semi-healthy, like they could be, you know, the best teams in the league. They beat the Chiefs, they beat the Bills, they crushed the Rams. Like, they've already done this, and they've shown they've proven to be capable of doing this even within this season. And if they just get some of these guys back, like Derrick Henry is a huge part of the team. So is AJ Brown. Julio Jones hasn't been it yet, but he can be. Like, he was in that Seattle Seahawks game. So, like, yeah, like, I don't see too many teams that are outright better than them, especially in the AFC. Like, you ran through them a little bit, but every team has flaws. The only team I really don't want to play again is the Patriots in New England, just because they seem to be one of the luckiest teams I've seen in quite a while. Like, you don't win a game throwing three passes in the whole game without being a little bit lucky. So, and even the Titans game where they get the two fumbles on a couple of running plays. So I would like to avoid them again, but you ran through it. The Ravens, Lamar Jackson looks terrible, and they also just lost their best cornerback, Marlon Humphrey, for the season. They are one of the most injured teams in the NFL. The Chiefs cannot throw the ball past the line of scrimmage, apparently. Their offense seems to be in shambles. The Chargers are the Chargers. The Bengals just got crushed by the Chargers. Bills, I cannot figure them out for the life of me. And then that's it for the playoff teams. And we really have no reason to be scared of any of them.
Yeah, there's nobody who really feels like they have a second weapon. Like, I guess maybe the Chargers, but really it's like, you know what you're going to get from every team, and you feel like if you can take away what they're doing well, you can beat them. So yeah, like, even in the NFC, like, not that we have to worry about this, but there's like, ever since the Cardinals lost against the Packers, and then, you know, the Packers just don't look very crisp, and it seems like Aaron Rodgers is just super discontent. And he was talking about David Bakhtiari today, half jokingly, about how Bakhtiari said he'd be back week one if Aaron Rodgers showed up, and then he hadn't played all season. And, you know, I don't know, like, there just doesn't feel like a true, like, number one, like, you know, come at the king, better not miss kind of team this year. So, yeah, like, when you say all that, like, if the Titans, if you drop the Titans into the playoffs and they have David Long, A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry, Bud Dupree, like, I mean, Julio, I guess if he comes back this week, like, are they the, like, most talented team in the playoffs? Like, I mean, maybe. I think there's a legitimate case for it at that point, but, I mean, you know, you have to get to that point first. So, but yeah, like, in terms of can this team make the Super Bowl, like, absolutely. Like, the bye is still very much up for grabs for anybody, and whoever gets the bye is going to face, you know, a group like half, you know, you get to, by definition, play half as many teams in the playoffs. Like, you get that, you know, bottom half cut out, and then you play other imperfect teams who didn't get 2 weeks to prepare for you. Like, that it's just a big advantage.
Let's talk about who they're going to get back, because immediately who we think of is the trio of Julio Jones, Racy McMath, and Dane Cruikshank, all three of whom were designated to return from injured reserve late last week. Obviously, the big name of those three is Julio Jones. I mentioned a second ago that I think the Titans can make it to the Super Bowl if they get two of the three of Jones, Brown, and Henry healthy. And while Jones, you know, right now is just going to be by himself out of that trio, it's a major life boost if this guy can come back, because, you know, I think Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is a good player. I do. And I think that if you put Nick Westbrook-Ikhina with Julio Jones, and Westbrook can sort of be a role player and the second guy, like, that just injects so much life into this, because now Tannehill has Julio Jones and Nick Westbrook, who Westbrook is... I'll ask this real quick. Do y'all think Nick Westbrook now is better than Tajae Sharpe was at his best for the Titans?
No.
No. I think they're similar. But
yeah, no. I guess it's just two different shades. Like, I don't think either one of them are as good as, like, Rashard Matthews, I guess. Like,
well,
who,
yeah. Rashard Matthews was a 1,000-yard receiver.
Well, I'm trying to think of a guy who would be, like, a good wide receiver three on this team, like, almost overrated, like, or almost overqualified. Hey, he's killing it out in Detroit.
They're like Zay Jones. Nick Westbrook is like Zay Jones.
Yeah.
Not the same person.
Well, but beside the point, like, throwing to those two guys as opposed to the trio of Westbrook and, you know, Rodgers and Des Fitzpatrick, who anything to get that guy off the field is going to be helpful. Like, that's huge. And you also potentially get Golden Tate in there, who, if nothing else, will be where he's supposed to be. He might not get there quickly, but...
This team is hilarious because there are players that just, like, should not be on the team, and we just did not see this. Like, did you guys know Buster Skrine is on the team? I was even aware of this. Oh, you guys
number
knew.
38 or some weird crazy number.
Apparently, like, this season has been something else. I just want them to get healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because, like, you talk about Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, and he, like, he's fine. Like, I think he is, like, a bit, like, a mix between Tajae Sharpe and Adam Humphries. Like, I think he's a little bit thicker than both of those guys and better blocker, but I don't think he's as quick as Humphries, and I don't think he can do quite as much as, like, a longer, rangier receiver as Tajae Sharpe did at points. But, like, just that utility, like, he can find the soft spot, like, he can catch a pass and, like, get a few yards extra. Like, I don't think he's a bad player. But if you go in and he's your fifth receiver in the playoffs behind AJ, Julio, Golden Tate, and Racy McMath, who, remember, Racy McMath was getting, people don't talk about this, Racy McMath was getting snaps in, like, week one and two as, like, the first receiver off the bench, like, with the offense. So, you have to think that the coaching staff, like, is mildly intrigued by him and, like, interested in trying to see what he's got, and much more so than Fitzpatrick. So, I'm curious to see what they do with him when he comes back, because if he comes back this week, then theoretically you get Julio, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, and Racy McMath, who were two of your top five receivers, or three of your top five receivers from the start of the season, which would be interesting.
So, aside from those three, Jones, Crookshank, and by the way, Crookshank, I think, as I saw our friend Tyler Rowland at Tic Tac Titans point out, I think Crookshank can open some things up on defense with what he can do as a dime linebacker. But beyond those three of McMath, Crookshank, and Julio Jones, I think the other big names, or at least big impact guys, you could get back this week as the Titans are Rashawn Evans, David Long, that's probably the big one, Long, Tier Tart, and Ola Adeniyi. Those are all guys who could come back on the defensive side of the ball. David Long coming back, I think, would be similar to the defense to Julio Jones going back to the offense, just inject some life into them, because Long plays the linebacker position like a bullet shot out of a gun, and we don't see that when he's not out there.
Yeah, he's just like an infectious player. Like, he gets everyone going just because, like you said, like, he will shoot a gap and make a play, and then he'll celebrate, and then everyone starts to get fired up, and you start seeing the cornerbacks come up and make plays. Like, he's that type of guy, and he kind of injects that type of life into the defense. So I think he's probably the most important one on the defense, at least, that we would like to get back. And I know we talked a lot about Rashawn Evans just not being all that great, but, I mean, we need bodies, you know? Like, guys need to be kept fresh, especially for this stretch run. Like, as many bodies of at least decent players that we could get back, it's going to be important for everyone.
I'll tell you what, Rashawn Evans is a lot better than Nick DeZubnar.
Yeah.
And Dylan Cole, who dropped a pick six.
I mean, at least he was close to the ball. Like, I've rarely seen Rashawn Evans with a pass breakup. But, yeah, like, you know, the main guys there are David Long and Tier Tart, right? Like, those are two guys who is probably more of a quote-unquote rotational starter, but when he's in, the whole defensive line just seems to do better and get more penetration and be more active, because he's so quick against centers and he's so big that if he gets in the backfield, he's just such a, like, wide body that you can't just sidestep him like you can some other guys. And then, I mean, I don't want to make Long sound like he's some all-pro or whatever, but he's, like, he's always been this way, just really fast and aggressive to the ball. And now that he's gotten a little bit more patient and he started to cover better, like, he's the clear number one linebacker on this defense. So, you know, we'll see how they go. Adeniyi, I mean, when Adeniyi's healthy and going, great. Like, I mean, you know, he can give you some speed off the edge and all that, but his contributions are mainly special teams. But, I mean, having those guys back, like, just the option to play those guys and the depth, and, okay, you know, go out and give Landry a breather for two plays, you know, go play special teams so that our starting linebackers don't have to be on special teams. Like, little things like that to give guys more time to rest and game plan for the next drive, like, that's huge.
I want to transition now into a Todd Downing conversation. Because last week, we took the week off, Will was like, I'm getting my Todd Downing takes in. So Will went on the Locked on Titans podcast last week. We're going to let Will give his Downing takes on our platform now. And Will, what I'm most curious about for you, because you've been very negative toward Downing really all season, but especially lately on Twitter, I see it from you constantly. So what I'm going to ask you is, what is Todd Downing's biggest weakness in your mind? We're going to get Will's answer to that question in just one bit. You're listening to No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. All right, Will. Todd Downing's biggest weakness is what?
It's a lot to choose from. His biggest weakness is probably that he does the defensive coordinator's job for them.
Oh no.
So what I mean by that is, when things are working, he's afraid to continue to attack the same thing over and over. He feels the need to constantly throw counter punches when the straight right works just fine. So, for example, like against New England, they had two running backs. I think Hilliard had over 10 yards per carry, and together the running backs averaged like 7.8 yards a carry. And despite that, they still, you know, threw it 21 times, something like that. And, you know, I think that was just non-screen passes. And you really didn't have to. Like, there was a specific drive where every play was a run until they got into the red zone. No, I'm sorry, until they got into goal to go. And then two of the four plays they ran from that point were passes. And look, like, I understand that, you know, you think you can't run it in those tight situations. You try to get clever and you try to pass, and that's fine. Like, I hear you. I understand the theory. But go back to Arthur Smith against Carolina, back when he really started getting his feet underneath him. There was a half where they just didn't run Derrick Henry very often. It was the first half where Deion Lewis got so many touches, and then he, like, instantly fumbled, and they were like, well, that was a bad idea. And so the second half, they came out and they had like a 9 or 11 play drive where they ran the ball every single time with Derrick Henry and scored a touchdown, because you don't want to do the defensive coordinator's job for them. Like, you want to force them to adjust and stop you before you stop doing something. If you try to get clever and outthink them and you drop back to pass when you think they're expecting run and they're just staying in their normal pass defense, then you've wasted a down, you've lost your momentum, and you put everybody in a bad situation. Like, I'm not going to keep talking about play action, because I think that's a more of a, it's like if somebody has a head wound and you're arguing about their haircut. Like, the problem is that I think Todd Downing should run more of that. Like, you look at the Patriots game, they averaged 9 yards an attempt on the 6 play action passes they had. But the problem is that he called 15 non-play action passes. Like, you have to think about how that works. Like, the only thing that's working in that game is your running game. And why on earth would you not run play action passes? In why would you choose to run empty sets with Cody Hollister, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, Dez Fitzpatrick, and whoever else was active? Like, you know, it's just common sense things. This is something that you've brought up before, but there's an issue where he thinks every player should be treated exactly the same in terms of when they're on the field. Like, there's no, okay, we got to get AJ the ball here. Like, there's no play specifically for other people. There's no, well, we can't drop the same play with Des Fitzpatrick that we do with Julio Jones. Like, it's just all the same thing, and it's just like he's not watching the game. It's like he can't see what works and what doesn't, and it's just the same mistakes over and over and over again.
I feel like he has no feel. There's no rhythm to everything, like, he calls. Arthur Smith would get into a rhythm, and you could see it. Like, he would keep running the same types of concepts. He would go down the field, he would come back the next drive, and he would do it all over again. Like, we're not getting that type of consistency. And I understand, like, he's not working with the same tools that Arthur Smith was last year because of all the injuries. But, I mean, a lot of it is just the plays that are being called.
But the problem is, even when he has those tools, he doesn't call the game. I mean,
that's
the
thing.
Like week one, you ran the 32nd most pass, like play action passes, and the offense had no rhythm. Like, I mean, he calls plays like Terry Rubisky with less creativity. I mean, it's just like, sure, like you're not running tight end, like you're not running crazy tight end sweeps or anything like that, but you're still as ineffective. You still don't marry concepts. You don't make things look the same pre-snap. Like you completely neutered what was a great offense.
On balance, I don't think he's been terrible. I don't think he's been good or great, but I think the contingent of Titans fans wanting him fired, like that's a bit much. But what gets me is it feels like every week he is up there at the podium talking about, you know, answering a question about why didn't you do this, whether it's play action or why'd you have to throw 50 times, or the answer is always like, well, you know, that's what the game script dictated. And he doesn't use those exact words, but he'll say things like, well, you know, when you're in the hole like we were and you get behind in a game, that's what happens. And, well, you know, when you get behind the chains and you're in 2nd and 12 and 3rd and 13, it's hard to run an effective play action. And, well, you know, when this happens, it's hard. Like, I feel like he is letting the game dictate his calls as opposed to him dictating the game. And I get that, like, you know, play action on 2nd and 12 and 3rd and 13 is probably not effective. Great solution to that, as I've talked about on the radio last week and on primetime when I was doing that, great solution, run it on 1st and 10. That's a great way to not have to run it on you know, 2nd or 3rd and behind the sticks. But it just feels like every week he's saying he's blaming something on the game script not going their way. Like, at a certain point, they've just got to impose their will. And I just, you know, recalled, because when Downing talked for the first time after Henry got hurt, he said, you know, I can't jerk the wheel. And Vrabel said the same thing. He's like, we can't jerk the wheel. We got to keep our identity. And I asked him last week, or, you know, whenever before the bye was, I'm like, you know, what's the status report on that? How closely have y'all stayed in tune to that identity? And his answer was the same thing. He's like, what's been great when we have allowed ourselves for it to be? It's like, dude, you just got to impose what you want to do, right?
Yeah, he's terrible.
I agree. And also, like, the game script thing makes no sense to me, because how many times have they been behind? Like, unless you're down
because of his calls.
24 points, like, you don't have to just throw every single play.
Like, he should never talk about a game script or even think about a game script, because his scripted plays are trash. Like, he is one of the most ineffective coaches in the NFL, like on either side of the ball. Like, the things you want an offensive coordinator to do are to customize the playbook to fit the talent you have on offense. He's completely failed at that, despite having the recipe for it left behind by the last guy and watching him do it. He does it, like, the plays you give him a full week to come up with are historically bad. I think we've scored one touchdown on our opening two drives, like, all season. You know, like, he is not fit to be an offensive coordinator. Like, he's been bad when he's been given chances. He had a chance to just basically copy what Arthur Smith did last year, and that's why he was hired. Like, he wasn't hired from within to make this new empty set offense. Like, they preached continuity and lied to everybody's faces. You know, Luke, you asked about does this look like Arthur Smith's offense? Does this look like there's any continuity between this and last year? Other than the fact that they don't run any of the same stuff.
I remember in Downing's opening press conference after getting this job, he said, it's not my job to impose my will on this offense. It's my job to, you know, let the offense kind of do its thing. Like, he stayed true to that. There hadn't been anything imposed on this offense.
I mean, like, But
what like, is this offense?
You know what's happened is this offense, until week 10, was Derrick Henry and not much else. And then when they lost Derrick Henry, all they were left was the not much else part. Like, I remember the three of us, after Henry went down, we talked on this podcast about, look, this offense is going to be worse, obviously, but it's going to be efficient, and they're going to keep running the football and going play action off of that. And, you know, look, on Sunday against the New England Patriots, they ran the ball exceptionally well, but there was nothing off of it. There was no play action to take advantage of that run game. And then, Adrian Peterson wound up being not very good, but the identity hasn't been there. And look, when you talk about this offense, I think some blame can go to Tannehill, right? I think fans have been far too eager to say either, you know, it's all Tannehill's fault or, you know, well, it's hard to blame Tannehill with the injuries. Well, when Tannehill throws the ball straight to Gruger Hill because he's staring down A.J. Brown, that's not an injury issue. But, you know, I don't think Todd Downing's really putting him or the group in positions to succeed. There's just a lot of problems there. Like, again, I'm going to bring that stat up, 9 turnovers in 2 games. That doesn't just happen, you know, by chance. There are a lot of things contributing to that.
Yeah, that's not normal. Like, no team should ever turn the ball over 9 times. I don't care what the conditions are. And especially when your quarterback is Ryan Tannehill, who I know like has not been playing well this year, but he's not trash. Like, he's not, you know, Sam Darnold. Like, there should not be this many interceptions and this many turnovers. And yeah, I mean, it's just a collection of things. A lot of things have been going poorly. Hopefully at least getting a little bit healthier will alleviate some of it. But I do think Todd Downing has to be better. I think Tannehill has to be better. And, you know, until they start making probably some schematic changes, I don't know if it's going to be all that much better heading into the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, it's all like, it doesn't have to be this hard. Like, it really, the problem is, like, this offense could put up 24 points a game, 27 points a game with the people they have out there now. They just won't do it. Like, they won't go to a super heavy play action offense. They won't go to a bootleg. They won't run primarily outside zone like they have in the past. And what you're left with is offensive linemen that don't fit the system that you're trying to run and don't have the chemistry that they should have. Wide receivers who are put at disadvantageous positions because when you run out of empty, defenses know a pass is coming. Like, there's no deception in the offense. Like, it's just like you're going to keep getting the same thing over and over, and you're going to keep making your quarterback uncomfortable, and, you know, you're going to get what you get. You know, it's unfortunate.
Let's switch sides of the ball. Defensively, why have the sacks stopped? How much of that is Bud Dupree? How much of that is something else? Because for a while there, all we could talk about was this Titans pass rush. And, oh, they need a nickname. Broadway Bullies, the Tickle Monsters. Oh, you know, Jeffrey Simmons for defensive player. Like, all this stuff. And we're not having those conversations anymore because they have 2 sacks in 2 games.
Yeah, well, some of it is Bud Dupree being injured, but I also think, I mean, it's just like normal regression.
That's fair.
I think they were kind of out kicking their coverage in terms of how much pressure they were getting. Like, it seemed a little bit unsustainable, especially when you factored in like that a lot of these players like were on the team last year, and I know a lot changed for the better, but I do think they were probably, you know, overproducing in that department. But I don't know, like, I kind of want to just throw these last 2 games out of the window and just chalk them up as like anomalies. It like we've talked about, it just seemed like they completely ran out of gas, and the offense not doing anything, just like it does not help the defense at all. Like, running more plays, having to watch your offense go 3 and out and get negative yardage consistently, like that affects you as a defensive player. Like, I bet they put their helmets on and they're like, all right, oh man, we got to do this again. We got to go make a play again. And at a certain point, like that starts to catch up to you.
Yeah, and they're never going to rush a mobile quarterback. Like, they're just too scared to. Like, I mean, that's what they do when they don't, like, and at the very least, when they don't have an athletic linebacker, like, long behind them to kind of spy, like, they're just not going to do it. Like, they're going to kind of try to keep the outside contained, maybe work a game or two on the inside, but, I mean, they were never going to try to get after Tyrod Taylor. Like, that was never going to be the plan. Mac Jones, I mean, they really got zero sacks in the game against the Texans and then two sacks in the last game. So, you know, against a non-mobile quarterback, because I don't think that Mac Jones has been sacked a ton. Like, I could be wrong, but I think that offensive line has done a pretty good job, and they've done a pretty good job scheming, you know, basically release valves out of the backfield if pressure gets too bad. So I do think some of that will adjust itself. But, yeah, like, they just haven't, like, when it gets down to it, like, Bud Dupree not being there is hard on them because they just don't seem to stunt as effectively. And Dupree, like, everybody talks about, like, his win rate or whatever. I don't really know how much of that is on him, because there's a lot of times where there's a three-man game with Landry looping around to, like, Dupree's B-gap, basically, and Dupree's job is to sit there and make sure that the quarterback doesn't have a chance to rush out of the pocket and escape. Like, he's kind of the responsible one while the other guys get to play. And that's what made that defense work really well. And so then all of a sudden, when you get flash pressure from Dupree and it ends up with Wentz throwing a pick six, like, that's what you get off of it. So I'm not sure. Maybe that'll clear up when he comes back. Maybe it's a long thing. I'm not quite sure.
When we come back, I want to talk about something that I don't think enough people are talking about in regard to what the Titans can get out of having had this bye. I feel like my college journalism professors would not have liked the grammatical structure of that sentence to be halves in there. But that's what we're going to talk about in 30 seconds. We're also going to do Stop the Nonsense. You're listening to No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. So, we know that the bye week has been good or will prove to be good for getting certain guys back. You know, for example, Julio Jones would have been able to return even if the Titans didn't have a bye week. He had already sat out three games, but getting that fourth week of rest, right, that's a big deal. And there's lots of situations like that, Long and Evans, etc. But what the Titans will also be getting back, potentially, is a normalized practice schedule. Because over the last few weeks leading into the bye, Wednesdays had become basically a walkthrough day for the Titans. They would do striders on the field, jogging around, and then they'd go into the bubble and do a walkthrough. And it was because they were so hurt that they really could only get in one day of practice without aggravating themselves. Vrabel, asked about that on Monday, said he hopes to be able to get back to a more normalized practice schedule this week. Now, I don't know how big of a difference that makes, but it's certainly a difference, right?
I'm not sure. I didn't really play football, so I really couldn't tell you. Will, would you care to give us the expertise?
It probably doesn't matter as much for a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, who you played against. It probably would have mattered more against the Patriots, and definitely would have mattered more against the Texans, just because when you're only walking through stuff, you can't get full speed, like, okay, this is how this quarterback moves, like, make sure you're actually running to the ball when people are running around, like, you're kind of half walking and just, you know, two-hand touching and all that. So that's the biggest difference, is like dealing with knowing where you need to be through contact, if that makes any sense.
Does it like help them to not get contact like during the week? Like I don't even know how many.
It's not like they're getting like full tackling drills or anything. It's more like, okay, a good example of this is in the Texans game, Laurell Murchison or somebody like went the wrong way and tried to penetrate and got in Jeffrey Simmons's way on what I'm assuming was a stunt, and basically blocked Simmons, and it was like, I don't know if it was a second down or a third down or something, but Tyrod Taylor kind of tucked it and just ran for like an easy 12 yards. And this was like, I don't know if it was right after half. It was right after something. It couldn't have been after halftime because they did such a good job after halftime. But it was on a drive where they had obviously just talked about it and he got in his way. Like if you have a week of practice where like you're actually running to the spots instead of just talking about it and walking through, like you don't necessarily make those mistakes. So it's little things like that. Like it's not like, oh, they get to finally tackle somebody to the ground. Like that shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. The good thing is they play the Jaguars. So they really don't have to worry about anything, period, because it doesn't seem like they have any sort of plan with anything they do on offense.
They're not juggernauts like the Texans or anything.
Yes, of course.
I want to talk about Jacksonville, mainly the quarterback. Is Trevor Lawrence just not that good? Because I know that, and I'm not saying I believe that. I'm asking for your opinion. I know the coaching has not been there, nor has the talent. But also, typically, even on bad teams, good rookie quarterbacks elevate. And he hasn't.
He's in an impossible spot. Like, he cannot succeed in this environment. Like, he has everything going against him. I don't think he's been all that good, like, in general. I don't think he's been awful. Like, if he was bad, like really bad, he would be turning the ball over way more than he has been. But I mean, Urban Meyer just does not know what he's doing. Their offensive staff, there's like a disconnect. I don't know if you guys saw Urban Meyer had a press conference and he was like surprised that James Robinson was in the game towards the end of that game when he had come in banged up. But apparently the running backs coach is the one who makes the rotation. And they just thought they wanted to get him snaps at the end of the game, even though he was banged up. And that comes in the same game that James Robinson had gotten benched for a fumble in order to get Carlos Hyde the ball more. Because when you have Carlos Hyde, you have to establish him at this point in his career. So, like, it's stuff like that. Like, their offense is in shambles. And Trevor Lawrence is throwing to Marvin Jones, who's still okay, but he's 32 years old. Laviska Shenault seems like a gadget player. DJ Chark is injured. He's throwing to James O'Shaughnessy as his number one, you know, safety valve. Like it's bad. I'm not judging Trevor Lawrence too much because I think he's in an impossible situation. But I also agree that he hasn't elevated anyone. But I don't know who really could, given what he's dealing with.
Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers now. He's only thrown more than one touchdown in a game once, and it was week one against Houston.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, it's like, if you take that Houston game out, he had three touchdowns and three interceptions, so let's be nice and wipe it out on both sides. He would only have six touchdowns and seven interceptions all year long.
He's only thrown nine touchdowns?
Yeah.
He's got nine touchdowns. They don't score points. I mean, they score like 10 points a game.
He's thrown the ball 426 times.
That's a lot.
That
to only
have
nine
like
touchdowns.
Yeah, and he's been sacked at least once in every game. So, I mean, yeah, like Matias is right. Like, it is truly an impossible situation. Like, not only like with that staff and that talent, but just like with the feeling of like Urban Meyer coming in, clearly not knowing what was going to happen and saying, like, this isn't a rebuilding year. Like, I expect to win the division this year. And then just getting tossed around like a rag doll. Like, I mean, it's bad there. Like, I don't know how they get out of that. Like, I don't know if they're even going to, like, for a long time, I thought they were going to fire Urban Meyer. Now, I don't know. Like, they may just keep him because they've come out and seemingly said that they were standing behind him and that they want him to build their culture. But, man, I just don't know.
The Titans better crush this team, by the way. I might actually be, like, upset if they only win by 4 points or something.
I mean, I'll always say the most dominant performance I've ever seen by a football team, in person anyway, was the Jags trip here in 2019, which would have been the last time I was at a Titans-Jags game. Obviously, things are a lot different now, but this is a team that the Titans dominate. When was the last time Jacksonville beat the Titans? It was that Thursday night game with Minshew, right?
Man, this feels like bad juju.
Jahmyr Douglas.
Minshew. Week 19, right? Like, or sorry, 2018? No.
2019. It was Thursday Night Football 2019.
Yeah. Like, week 3 or 4.
That was the week that I think I was pretty much officially out on Mariota.
Yeah, and then I had to have surgery a few weeks later, and then I was like, all right, maybe I'll get a win from the Titans the next week. And then it was like, nope, we get shut out against the Broncos, and Mariota gets benched and never gets the job back. And at the time, it was a very devastating time for me.
All right, it is time for Stop the Nonsense. What do we got, guys?
I'll start mine. So, speaking of offensive coordinators earlier and how, you know, the wrong ones get fired sometimes, Joe Brady getting fired by the Carolina Panthers because he couldn't make it work with no Christian McCaffrey and with Teddy Bridgewater, the ghost of Cam Newton, and Sam Darnold is unacceptable. Because people forget, but there was a time in the first three games of the season where Joe Brady was making Sam Darnold work, and everybody was so happy to yell and laugh about how Adam Gase was terrible at his job, which is true, but everybody was so quick to say that, they forget that Joe Brady was the one making all that work, and now the guy who basically turned Joe Burrow from just a name to a Heisman winner, and who helped the best, you know, LSU offense in decades. I mean, maybe ever. Like, is,
I mean,
all
LSU,
of a sudden,
maybe
the
best college football offense ever.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. Like that, like, and people, you know, look at their talent, but they don't remember that Justin Jefferson, I believe, was like a 3-star or a 2-star player coming out of college. Like, you know, Justin Jefferson did a lot of that on his own, but it's not like he was, you know, a 5-star, like, blue chip guy. Like, maybe I'm misunderstanding something here, but the fact that he could create talent out of nothing there and he made it passable in years 1 and 2, despite getting no help from the front office, like, somebody should hire him immediately. Like, NFL, whatever, like, just offer him like an advisory job and then evaluate after the end of the year when you have him under contract. But I mean, the guy clearly knows football. Give him a Jim Schwartz job or something. But man, what a cluster.
Yeah. Speaking of Justin Jefferson, his head coach needs to be fired.
Oh, it's been time for a while. Yeah. But yes, for sure.
Yeah.
I just want to say about Joe Brady, like, last year, with Teddy Bridgewater as his quarterback, they almost had 3 1,000-yard receivers. Like, Curtis Samuel, I think he might have missed a game or two. He had 850. The other two were over 1,000 yards. Like, the guy's a good coach, and he's 32 years old, so he's going to get picked up quick. He might be going to the Miami Hurricanes with Cristobal, so let's hope that one happens for my sake.
What about LSU with Brian Kelly?
No. And his southern accent.
Look, I'm here with my family.
Where he should go is he should go to Oklahoma with Venables, because he's the one who put it on Venables' defense when Clemson and LSU were in the national championship. Venables should just say, you can have all the offense. I'll stay out of your way. Let's go win some titles.
All right, I got mine. And this is probably long overdue. I'm tired of Titans fans caring what the national media thinks. And this is not like a, you know, oh, I saw something today and I have to respond to it. It's just like, I did see something today, but it's the culmination. Like, you know, every time the Titans aren't number two in power rankings, people freak out. It's like, well, first of all, they've lost two games in a row. I don't know why you would expect the national media to buy into this right now. But, like, you cannot on one hand say the national media knows nothing about the Titans and Keith Beard and why do people not think Derrick Henry's the MVP? Obviously, they're not paying any attention. And then also say, I want those people to like me or like the team. Like, you cannot, it is a cognitive dissonance to say, these people have no clue what they're talking about, they're detached from reality, they're not paying attention, and then say, but I want those people to like me, because that will validate me. Just stop caring, stop paying attention. Care what your local folks think, care what maybe a select few of the national media think. You know, your Peter Schragers and Kyle Brandt's, the people who are in tune with the Titans. But in terms of the narrative of the national media at large, stop caring. It's dumb. They don't know. Also, side note, weird, the New York Post ran a story about Ryan Tannehill going on vacation during the bye week. Oh, well, I don't know why that was a story. And it wasn't like, it wasn't posed as like, how dare he, which makes it perhaps even weirder that that was considered news, especially for the New York Post, a major news publication in a major U.S. city. Weird, but hey, good for Ryan Tannehill. Take the week off.
Yeah, it's true. Titans fans care too much about what the media thinks, but...
And I feel like that's probably true across the NFL, but at the same time, yeah. The Titans fans are also saying, like, I think Patriots fans, for example, care if a national media person watches that game last night and it's like, yeah, but how sustainable is that? And how scary? Like, sure, you know, Patriots fans are going to care about that, but they're also not saying these people don't watch the Patriots. They don't know what they're talking about. And that's the difference.
I mean, the media is never going to like the Titans. Is it?
They'd have to win a ring. Like that's the thing. Is like everybody feels a lot more secure once they have a ring, because then they're like, well, you know, that Titans team did win it. So blah blah blah. Like, as long as you can say like that franchise has never won anything, like that, it feels like you have, like, as a fan base, it feels like you have to prove yourself. And but you cannot invest time and energy into that year after year.
Yeah. Speaking of the media, actually, well, I was going to go into my stuff nonsense, but before that, I was watching, or they were showing the Dolphins game this past week against the Giants. Terrible game, but at one point they were talking about the Titans, like John Robinson and Mike Vrabel were like on the broadcast. You saw that, right?
What?
Yeah.
It took me by surprise.
It was this thing about like, basically about like New England, like disciples who've left, and they were talking about him, and then they were like blah 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 blah, because like Brian Flores was the defensive coordinator and Judge was the special teams coach in New England, and then they were like, but the Titans have made it work. And then all of a sudden this graphic with John Robinson, which it was the most unflattering picture of John Robinson ever. It was like a strong wind was blowing and he couldn't open his eyes all the way. And it was like, he like looked 10 pounds overweight. Like, it was a tough look. And then it was like Vrabel on the other side. And it's like 5 winning season, like all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's a nice shout out.
Yeah, that was cool. We don't usually get to see that. So, that was a nice change of pace. So for my stop the nonsense, it is Courtney Fallon, who used to work for the NFL Network. She's always been in tune with the Patriots, and she decided to piggyback on all the Bill Belichick praise that we saw last night after the Patriots won, with Mac Jones throwing 3 passes the entire game, and then running, how many running plays did they have? like 72 or something.
That combined, they rushed for like 71 rushing attempts.
Absolutely ridiculous. And they ended up winning. And everyone was calling Bill Belichick a genius and whatnot for an amazing game plan. Even though the Bills just committed mistake after mistake. But anyway, that's not what I'm here for. So she tweeted, Bill Belichick outcoached Sean McDermott on national TV by running a 6 offensive lineman, triple option offense, a la Navy midshipman football. Absolutely brilliant. Okay, first of all, that was not a triple option offense, okay? Because there was no option for Mac Jones to run the ball. Like, that is the entire point of the triple option. There was also no threat of him throwing the ball because they didn't even try to hide it. They were just handing off. So there was no triple option here. And the fact that she tweeted this, like you're a former NFL Network reporter, man. You can't be this blind to what you're seeing. So that's bad. That was bad, and it really shouldn't happen.
Some wild takes coming out of that game last night.
I don't know if it's because, like, Belichick had the Navy, like, face mask on, and, like, it was like, Navy runs that. I saw somebody tweet about that. Like, maybe they were running that. It's like, no, it's like they were just running jumbo sets and running power and stuff. Like, that's not, like, triple option. It's not Veer. It's not any of that kind of stuff.
There's some wild takes out of that game. Like, everyone going in was like, man, the wind and the playing conditions are going to be impossible. And, like, I feel like in a game like that, you sort of throw out, like, obviously the win matters for standings purposes, but in terms of evaluating a team, like, you can't, because that's not what these teams are going to do normally. But so many people are trying to, like, write off the Bills because they lost by 4 points in a blizzard. Like, let's calm down, guys. Context, please.
Yeah, and their kicker missed because of the wind in that game, and if that didn't happen, it would have been a totally different game. Also, Stephon Diggs dropped a touchdown. Gabriel Davis dropped a pass or two, so I agree. Like, can't judge anything off of that.
Did y'all see that tweet that PFT Commenter had before the game of that kick of the field goal attempt in pregame warmups? That, like, dude kicked it and it just, like, went straight into the stands because of the wind.
Yeah, when it was like good from 70 or whatever.
Yeah. Oh man, crazy. All right, we'll be back next week to recap Titans versus Jaguars. What game's after that?
Steelers. Steelers.
That'll be interesting.
That's a tough one. That's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, maybe. Steelers. You know, I don't care who their quarterback is. At Steelers is always going to be tough. So until then, for Will and Matias, I'm Luke, reminding you and everyone else in the sports world to stop the nonsense.